Welcome to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. This podcast is all about conversations about healing and rising from the ashes of your grief and trauma. In this podcast, we will be deconstructing and highlighting the different aspects of grief and loss. I'm your host, Dr. Christina Zampatella. Now, if you as a caregiver had, I'm just thinking about all the presentations that I've done about caregivers, right? And I know another risk factor for their potential increase in suffering is have any pre-existing mental health condition. Mm. So if you have unresolved, not resolved, but not integrated previous losses, or you've had a history of anxiety, depression, personality disorders, bipolar disorder, it can go on and on. It can exacerbate those pre-existing conditions, and you may not be coming in with the coping skills necessary in order to provide caregiving resources and skills, but yet you might be the only one around. Mm-hmm. Or you might have a family, family members who, Sam's there, so whatever, she's got it. Mm-hmm. She's strong. Mm-hmm. Let me hear that freaking one more time. She's strong. She's got this. And maybe I'll go up there and see mom, in a couple of weekends when I don't have the kids, because we're supposed to go to the beach this weekend. Mm-hmm. And here you are. So it's putting a strain on the relationships in the family. Mm-hmm. As well.
Yep. Where then the unequal distribution, like within mm-hmm. the family, can present like a lot of resentments towards the end, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of self-sacrifice from some family members to be present, and then some just don't attend to it at all. So, and then in turn, how that affects the other relationships that you have with the people around you. So it's a multifaceted, like, I feel like we could approach it from both the person that has the illness and the person that's caregiving, but both are struggling with this loss of health and how to navigate it. And I feel like that, it's just natural.
Yeah.
It's part of life, but it's also natural to be frustrated or confused and overwhelmed with the process.
Yeah.
So it's important to, I would just say, reach out, touch like with support groups, and recognize that this is a shared experience that other people are trying to navigate as well. And once we have that like support network, that can kind of help alleviate some of that stress, but not completely.
It's funny that you mentioned that you were like, we got to look at it from both perspectives, that by the person who has the chronic and or terminal illness and the person who is the caregiver, because there are factors on both sides that are risk factors for prolonged grief, like an actual like ongoing disorder should that person pass. Now, the other part of this is, I was just thinking of something because I got like kind of excited about the fact that you mentioned that. I was like, yes, that's exactly where I was going. Non-finite losses. Mm. Ones in which, for example, the person's physically present, but not emotionally or psychologically present. Mm-hmm. For example, people with Alzheimer's and all the losses along the way. Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing pretty good today. He recognized who I am. And then next time you go, I didn't know who I was, and the grief associated with that and the ups and downs of the trajectory of Alzheimer's and then some of the aggression that might come out that, often is found with people with Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think people who have loved ones with Alzheimer's, I don't know if they're always told, like, by the way, aggression is often a component of this. It's hitting those parts of the brain that are associated with being able to navigate their emotions and to be able to have that gate between, how they're feeling and their frustrations and what's coming out. And who else knows, right? Because there's more research out there that are still working on trying to understand that. So these non-finite losses, like you having to learn how to live with not knowing if there's an end or when the end.
And the changes they have. And one of the important things that, like, I encourage people to, if it comes to, like, as we're talking, like, dementia, touching in with your support network in regards to the police department. I know that sounds weird.
No, talk about it.
But speaking to behaviors of, like, dementia, there may be elopement.
Right.
And the violence, like the agitation, it's not unheard of that the police get called while this individual is living like in the home and the caregivers are trying to manage it. But, you know, there can be a lot of components where they're taken back to a different point in their lives where they're not recognizing they're now 80. Like they might be in their mind 30 and their husband had cheated on them. And that's who their caregiver is now. And they think like every time their husband is leaving, they're going to go cheat. And then it escalates. So my point of this is informing the police department of your loved one and that they have this, you know, condition and when to respond can be like a heads up, like, hey, this person has this disorder that they may react this way and this is why. I actually have a very unfortunate, I'll just put this out there, a friend of mine had a woman that had eloped from her home and her family didn't know. And they actually ended up hitting her and she ended up dying. Yeah. Like,
wow.
By the car. And
they hit her with a car.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. She died from
How do you even wrap your head around that?
I think that's an ongoing process for all of them. Right. Like with that. But again, it shows how stressful it is to be a caregiver. I mean, it could take one moment and you're not paying attention. And look, this is where this fear is stemming from. It's very valid and real. And then living with that and how to process that and meaning make of that. Also, risk factors for, I feel like we're talking like complicated grief down the road. So being a caregiver, I have to say, is probably the hardest job because it's one you don't get paid for and generally, unless you go through like a state program, which some people can do if they're lucky. But there's a lot of just stress on your shoulders to not only sometimes go to work, take care of a loved one, run a household, all of the other things. And then the moment you try to breathe, something horrible can happen.
Right.
So that was just, I didn't mean to go off on that tangent.
No, that's a good, it's an important tangent. I mean, I think it's one thing to talk about things theoretically. It's another thing to talk about like our real life lived experiences. Like I can give you a ton of clinical cases, but I want to try to keep them, you know, confidential. But when I don't know, when we're in the middle of this kind of stuff and I'm talking about, you know, something that is my own story, I mean, what's going to be, how do you bring it to life better than that? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I thought, I was thinking also, you know how I said, you know, oh, the medication and you're, you know, constantly a reminder and you, you know, may not want to do it. There's also the side effects of medications that we don't talk about because you can see some people have a freaking, you know, medicine cabinet full of medication on their nightstand and okay, yes, each medication might have a role. We don't know every way in which they're interacting with each other. We absolutely, there's no way, right? But the pharmaceutical company will say, yep, this medication can be used for, you know, pain management, but also, by the way, it can be used for something else. Okay, well, if it can be used for something else, why am I taking these other 5 meds? So we also have this non-compliance issue that can happen. And then that becomes an issue between the caregiver and the person who maybe isn't doing so well.
Yeah. And I've had individuals too, where they feel the guilt as a caregiver that they weren't looking out in the medical system for certain things. That may have resulted in a medication that made them drowsy. That person fell and that led ultimately to their death. And there's that guilt of not being the perfect caregiver, but like you can't control all of those circumstances. Like we have faith in the medical system to look through these side effects, right? But yet we're presented with again and again these circumstances where it can also lead to traumatic experience.
Absolutely. Yep. You know, I may not be able to engage in the things that actually do reduce my, like if I am the person that does have the chronic illness, if I'm taking these medications, those medications might be keeping me from having the quality of life. You know, we're talking about having quality of the best quality life as possible if you have a chronic illness. Well, if I'm on these, all these medications, am I really having the best quality of life, or do I go and get a second opinion or a third opinion to where somebody, and they, then they start making the tweaks on our medication And what if you start feeling better? Okay, you started feeling better. Now you're pissed off at the first doctor who didn't realize, by the way, there was a better way of doing this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And dealing with all of those emotions.
Yeah.
And as their illness progresses, the caregivers, we touched a little bit on this, sometimes those that are the chronically ill, and as their health progresses, or gets worse, their world continues to get smaller because they feel ashamed. Maybe they need oxygen or something. Or a wheelchair. Things that we, are not wanting to admit that we might need. Mm-hmm. And how it might be helpful, right? How we're talking about, some of the medications that might be counterintuitive, but what have you. But as the chronically ill are faced with losing their independence and that world shrinks, the caregiver has to adapt to that. And then just the further isolation that we were talking about, I just really want to hone in on the importance of needing outside supports, because so many times and times again, I've just heard how their world has shrunk and now they don't know how to engage back into the world outside of being a caregiver. Does that make sense? Because they make their identity that.
Yeah.
So it's a lot.
It's a lot that people are going through. Mm-hmm. And there's that identity shifting, not only happening with the caregiver, but I think we mentioned also happening with the person with the terminal illness. Instead of, I'm Christina, I'm an epileptic. You know, and I can't even wipe my own ass because my brain has gotten fried so many times from having, the seizures that I'm at a point where, I'm bedbound. This stuff happens. Mm-hmm. So now my dignity gets impacted. Mm-hmm. And do I really want my loved one to be the one that's taking care of me? And it makes me feel as if I am a child, an infant all over again, where maybe I can't feed myself. And I'm thinking of other, disorders and other illnesses where, I have to be fed. What if I am a, paraplegic and I'm only, that's a chronic illness that you're going to need 24-hour care. Mm-hmm. And, and then holding on to hope that maybe they'll come up with something, where people will be able to get better. And so there's a constant looking out for that as well. Holding on to that hope. And you don't want to take hope away from anybody. And you know what? There might be very good reasons to have hope, but I think the dignity part of it is also
huge.
It is.
Mm. It is huge because I just know of individuals just in the experience in the caregiving world that how you touched on the way their body changes, they sometimes can feel a sense of shame and withdrawal even from their family.
Yep.
And isolate themselves even then. And then the caregiver even feels more isolated from. Yep. And the unfinished business that we talked about before can really happen because both are afraid to broach the subject. But you both know things are not well.
Yeah. It's I don't want to make things worse than they already are.
Or acknowledge where is this headed.
Right. All right.
So it's a lot. It's just, there's so many facets of it. I feel again, it's another one that we can make into multiple episodes just because there's the caregiver. There's so many different types of caregiving, but also as being someone that's diagnosed with a progressive disease, how that impacts yourself, your self-perception, and how you relate to others.
Yep.
It's going to directly impact also the caregiver.
Yeah.
So
when we're thinking about wrapping up this episode, what are three takeaways from this one you think it would be important for people to, our listeners or viewers, what do you think would be important?
I would say definitely, find local support groups that are caregivers so that you can recognize you are not alone.
Right. Not just grief group.
No, not grief
group. It's not the right.
No.
That's not what you're looking for.
No, you're looking for a caregiver. And if you're lucky, you can find one that is specific to their disease. Look up the foundations for the research that is for that specific disease, and they should have
something,
support groups for that.
Okay.
The other takeaway I would have is you have to carve out self-care time. I mean, in any way possible, it's difficult, easier said than done. And I know that there's feelings associated with guilt, but the only way we can give to others mm-hmm. is when we ourselves are full. And if you are functioning from burnout, you're going to be in a daze and you're not going to be
right.
A strong caregiver, like the way you would want to be, because you're just so burnt out and exhausted. Mm-hmm. And my last takeaway, honestly, would be therapeutic support. Mm-hmm. I think that having an open environment where you can just process everything you're going through, all the changes, all of the everything, the relationship, the dynamics, how your life is changing, how theirs is changing, it's very difficult to navigate. And I think just having a safe space where people will not say anything but be present and help you navigate it and not mm-hmm. be judgmental is really important, because sometimes people come from a well-meaning place but can do more damage than help. So
right.
that would be my goal, because you need to carve out that time just for yourself to process all of these changes.
And you can do that. You can do online. You were talking about you did, you know, the online group. You can do online psychotherapy so that mm-hmm. you do not have to leave the home. If that is something that you're unable to do, mm-hmm. you can find those people. Mm-hmm. But in that, I just want to point out, vet the therapist. Mm-hmm. Make sure that your therapist is mm-hmm. somebody who's familiar mm-hmm. with this experience, mm-hmm. because we'll have a lot of people out there that say they specialize in grief. And when you get in there, they don't specialize in grief. They right. just have worked with a lot of people who are grieving. Well, guess what? Every therapist has worked with a lot of people who are grieving, but that doesn't mean you're like certified as a thanatologist or sent mm-hmm. has worked in the field of like hospice, like you did for years and years and years as a bereavement mm-hmm. coordinator, where you were exposed and trained mm-hmm. in a way that other therapists are coming out of their, you know, master's mm-hmm. and doctoral programs with not one class on death, loss, grief, trauma, or aging. Mm. So how are you, just because you've worked with a lot of people and you went to, you know, a one-day CEU does not make you a specialist.
Thanks.
So if it is a complicated situation, not that there aren't amazing therapists out there that can walk next to you and facilitate that, if there are complications that are anticipatory grief and mm-hmm. being able to understand the unique unique components of those specifics is very, very powerful. So if you got anybody in your area, or if you look up things like on, you know, Psychology Today, for example, and you're trying to find somebody, make calls and don't be afraid to ask questions. Mm-hmm. What is your training in this? Mm-hmm. What is your experience in that? Not just have you worked with a lot of people like this? What is your training mm-hmm. in this? Mm-hmm. What is your education? And keep making telephone calls until you actually do find that person, mm-hmm. because we're out there. Mm-hmm. We're just harder to find. Mm-hmm. Or hopefully you find an organization like ours where, you know that every single person here was vetted by me before I let you work for me.
It's great. No, but truly, it's yeah. important to have the support that can actually yeah. navigate you through
yeah.
what is one of the most difficult journeys I think any of us can go through.
Yep. Well, I thank you so much for taking, well, first of all, I've dragged you through like 3 hours of podcast time, but thank you for talking about this really important topic, especially with, you know, knowing that people who are caregivers are so often so isolated. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they, you know, they're pushed in the direction of seeing exactly, you know, or hearing, you know, what you have to talk about today. And you gave them some really good feedback and ideas on what they actually can physically do, because it's such a disempowering feeling sometimes. So having like, okay, there are steps that I can take can be very empowering. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Oh my God. Of course. Well, thank you for joining us today. I hope that you found this, this topic helpful. If you did, pass it along to anybody else who might find it helpful. And thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Phoenix Rising with Dr. Z. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it, subscribe, and leave a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. We want to be a resource for anyone who is experiencing loss, and this is a simple way you can help us spread the word. Check out our show description There you'll find a link to connect with me on social media, as well as helpful articles and resources.